This is a Steam Studio production.
Welcome to the Steam Spotlight, where we celebrate the inspiring achievements of students, educators, and community partners making waves in the Steam field.
For this Steam Studio Spotlight, we are excited to welcome Sarah Moskell. Sarah's goal at Northern Illinois University is to help students live the way they want to live and to be well in that process. While college is an exciting time to explore one's dreams and passions, it also brings about high levels of stress, mental health concerns, sleep issues, unhelpful coping strategies, and more. Sarah wants students to know that they are not alone in navigating their college journey. Sarah and her team are there to create opportunities, experiences, and resources to help students be well and make choices that align with achieving their goals.
Well, welcome to the Steam Studio, and today we have Sarah with us. Welcome, Sarah.
Hi, thanks for inviting me.
So we're so excited to talk to you today. Before we dig in, can you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Sure. My name is Sarah Moskell. I use she, her pronouns. I'm the Interim Associate Director for Student Wellness at Counseling and Consultation Services here at NAU, which is the main counseling center on campus. What I do, that is an interesting question. I help to promote mental health and well-being on campus. And that can look like a variety of things. So doing podcasts, it can involve creating programs, peer education, social media, essentially just to try to get the word out to, you know, better improve yourself and to prioritize your well-being. So not like a specific thing, more like a goal.
Yeah. So how do you define student well-being? Like what does that all encompass? Is it everything from, is it mental health? Is it physical health? Like what's the scope that you usually work within?
Yeah, great question. So when it comes to well-being, you really want to look at the whole person. So being well doesn't just mean being physically well or, you know, you're not sick or have the cold or flu. It's you are living your best life and you're feeling your optimal best. And there's a lot of areas of you that are involved in that. So I know you mentioned emotional health, so your mental well-being. There's also your spiritual well-being, which, yes, involves religion and your spiritual views. But it's a lot about if you feel that you're making choices that are in alignment with your values and who you are. There's occupational wellness, your career choices, major choice, social well-being, physical well-being, environmental well-being, which, yes, is taking care of the environment, recycling. But it's also, do you feel safe and supported in the spaces that you occupy, and how do you kind of create that? So well-being, while I didn't quite give a solid definition, it's all of the pieces that can help you to be your optimal you.
Now, is that language that has shifted over time? Has that, because I remember being a student long ago,
we won't
talk about how long ago.
Some undefined distance in the past.
Some time ago. You know, I try to think about, you know, granted I was a commuter, so I wasn't always on campus, but what were some of the resources? And I feel like there has been this shift to expand that definition of student support and what students need to be successful. Have you noticed that too? Do you see it still changing, evolving? What does it look like over time?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I don't know if I've actually sat and thought about that. From as long as I can remember with my education, so my undergrad, I did biology education teaching and then moved into counseling and now public health promotion. And so even in my teaching courses, we really were taught to look at the whole person, the environment, those factors that can influence a person's well-being. I think what we're seeing now is that people outside of helping fields and health fields are starting to see and have that perspective of looking at well-being as the whole person. So maybe that's how that shift has been starting. I know one of the shifts that I've really have started to see in public health, health promotion is this upstream approach when it comes to helping communities to be healthier. So rather than looking at what the main issue is and kind of putting a Band-Aid on it, you're going up the stream, up the system to see the policies, systems, environment in place and how we can make adjustments to improve somebody's well-being based on the spaces that they are in and remove barriers.
Interesting. So a bit more of either a systemic or a root cause approach.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Also, I think the three of us come from helping fields. I think that's a good way to look at that. When you're talking about how more people are being aware of that, are you thinking that that's becoming more accepted within our community and our areas that we can talk about these things? And it's more, it's kind of like, hey, maybe you should go to a podiatrist. It's kind of that type of a thing. Like if your foot's hurting, you should go get help. If you're hurting, regardless of where it may be, mentally or physically or emotionally or spiritually, like, is that kind of where you're saying that people are just more accustomed to saying, no, you should go get help. You don't have to suffer in silence.
Yeah, I think more people are prioritizing it, valuing it more, acknowledging it, validating it. You know, the phrase, you know, mental health is health, you know, like phrases like that are becoming more common. So I think in some way, yeah, people are accepting it more and trying to encourage folks more. There's been a lot more destigmatizing, and a lot of what helps destigmatizing is messaging campaigns, educational opportunities and resources. It's leaders, educators, showing that they value it and trying to incorporate it into their day-to-day or the environments that they're in.
I think what's interesting, so when we first started working with you, it was around the Wellness Fair, which was a fantastic event. Congratulations on that. It was really fun.
Thanks, yeah.
And I think what was really cool is this was one of the first years that we at NIU STEAM were really involved by setting up a room that was focused on mindfulness and play. And I think, do you want to talk a little bit about what are some of the strategies you use around mindfulness, play, and that kind of fun exploration that it's all still connected to wellness?
Yes. Okay. Now this is where I'm going to nerd out.
You can nerd out. It's a safe space for us here.
I love that. Nerd out. I love that. So I've always been very passionate about experiential education and trying to help the learner discover the learning rather than, you know, you just telling somebody this is a fact and then you just have to memorize it. And that's probably my science educator background as we learn all about inquiry-based learning and tapping into the natural curiosity and whatnot. But what I have learned from getting my master's in counseling is that there's parallels to that in helping somebody to make a behavior change in their life. You can't just tell somebody to, you know, don't be stressed, don't be anxious. You need to help them in a way that's going to meet them where they're at to slowly make that change in their life. And so you tap into the curiosity, experiential, so forth, so forth. Okay, let's come to this idea then. The sensory playground that was at the fair. So besides experiential education, I always talk to my peer educators about quote, air quote, tricking people into learning. Because sometimes the topics we talk about aren't as enticing, or they still have that stigma around it. So how can we entice people to see how you can experience this thing that looks cool and fun, and just you secretly learn the skills throughout it? And why not do that through play and curiosity? And so that's how the sensory playground came to be. And through my friends at the Holmes Student Center reservation team, shout out to Shannon, recommended you all. And I was like, I was so excited because you all kind of do the curiosity play thing. And that's how the idea came to fruition. And here we are. Would you like me to kind of talk about what happens like in the sensory playground?
Yeah, because I think that was part of our conversation too, was, you know, you started bringing in the five senses and things that we do from a scientific or engineering learning standpoint, also being connected to that mindfulness. Like, so I really thought that was a fun connection.
Yeah, so the connection there really ties into the concept and practice of mindfulness. Mindfulness is the ability to be fully present in the moment without judgment. And in doing so, one can help to better manage mental health, support your well-being, decrease levels of stress and tension on your body. You'll build a greater acceptance of who you are, what you experience. There's so many benefits to mindfulness. It is a skill, though, a muscle, if you will, and you have to practice it and work it to be able to reap these benefits. And so one of the ways that you can practice mindfulness is through grounding techniques. So grounding techniques will bring you back in your body when you're feeling really big emotions. And you could do this grounding technique with your five senses. So you go through each of your five senses and you focus just on that sense. So if we were doing sight, if you will, I would encourage somebody to look around the room and identify five things that you could see. And so they may start to like point things out. So I see a computer screen. I see the tree out my window. And I would then encourage that person to describe it. So you're focusing more on that piece. And so with the sensory playground, it's tapping into those five senses to be right in that moment. Because when you're really focused on those details, you're being curious and observant about them and non-judgmental, like a scientist would. You notice that a lot of that noise and that tension you may be experiencing from stress can start to decrease. So if you give yourself the patience, grace, and opportunity to give it a try, then you may discover that sensation.
That's an interesting connection, because we do talk about, when we look at the scientific practices and some of those essential skills that students need to be able to think like a scientist or an engineer, we talk about observation skills. We talk about the ability to describe in detail beyond just the surface, but to really be able to focus. And it's interesting that, and we also talk about how you need to practice those skills, because we don't always do it, and to be intentional about, I'm going to sit and I'm going to listen. Like, I love sitting out on my back porch at the end of the day and seeing if I can pick out all the different bird sounds that I hear.
That's so cool.
And it's just kind of a fun way to get in the zone, put down a screen. I'm not thinking about, you know, I'm not ruminating on that email I had to send at the last minute or what's coming tomorrow. I am trying to determine if that is a robin, or I heard an oriole yesterday, or the peacock across my street.
Interesting.
Yeah. But again, it's allowing you to focus and make observations and practicing that skill. So I love that it can kind of serve this dual purpose to help you refocus and reground in the distractions, away from the distractions of every day.
Yeah. And if anything, rather than it helping you to maybe push away those distractions or run away from them, as it's only natural too, because the distractions are uncomfortable, mindfulness is helping you to sit with them and to show your mind and body that I can sit with this. These distractions, ruminations, i.e., you're having lots of thoughts about something, that they're just thoughts. That's all they are, just thoughts. And so if you notice them and you notice the sensations you're having, you acknowledge them, then you're able to sit with them more, develop a greater acceptance. And acceptance doesn't have to mean that you like them. And I'm giving a big thumbs up right now. No, it means you're accepting that they are there. They're coming up, their thoughts. And so I love that you developed that practice, because that's hard to do. So if you don't mind, I'd love to ask, how did you get started with your end of day bird mindfulness practice? Because I would imagine it wasn't just like it just started, you know?
No, and I think it's one of those things where it wasn't like, hey, I'm going to become a bird person. Mm-hmm. You know, this is, I'm not in my bird watching era. It was, it was really just, I enjoy sitting on the back porch at the end of the day because it's, you know, it's shady. It's all those different reasons we like to touch grass once in a while. And yep. It was really just my husband like, hey, what's that bird? Hey, have you heard that? And I think the other place that generated the interest is I was working on a project around artificial intelligence, and there is an app that helps you identify birds by bird song. And so through that activity, I started listening more to bird sound. It wasn't just the noise. You could start to pick out the voices and using the app to help identify. And through using that app, then I started to get an ear for it. Now it's just kind of this relaxing thing that is fun to do. And it's a way my husband and I, yes, we sit and talk about birds on our back porch.
So lovebirds are talking about the birds. Lovebirds is what I'm hearing.
Yes. And arguing over, was that a bird or a frog? Which apparently what I always thought was a bird is a tree frog. Because
interesting.
Yeah. Or it's, was that a bird or was that the kids across the street? So it's just one of those things that evolved, but it became a relax. Like it's also realizing that after you did it, you're like, oh, I actually feel pretty good now. That stress, I'm like, my shoulders aren't as tense or my head's not spinning as much. And so taking a moment to reflect on how did that activity impact you? I think that's something that's important too.
Yeah, you beat me to what my next question was going to be, which was, how did you know, or when did you start to notice you were feeling those benefits? And you noticed it naturally, that physical tension in your shoulders lessened, your head was less noisy, maybe. And what I also noticed is that while you were talking, it's like you experienced joy by just being in it. You were being playful and you were embracing that. I also heard that to start the practice, you started with something that was already enjoyable and pleasing to you, which was sitting on your back porch, noticing the nature. I would imagine your husband joining in was also a joyful piece as well. And so for folks who want to maybe try this, mindfulness and, you know, being curious with your five senses could be applied to any activity. You could be fully present in an activity at any time. It just takes that intention to tell yourself, I'm going to pause. What does this experience physically feel like to me? What am I noticing? What does it smell like? What does it sound like? Is that a frog in a tree, or the kids, or I don't know, a bird, you know?
And the just, peacock across the street.
Exactly. You don't hear that every day. You really don't. So just being curious about that. So thank you so much for sharing your experiences with that.
You're welcome.
Well, then, Sarah, as Kristen mentioned, with like AI and being able to find information out that we might not have had access to, how so many times nowadays there's uncertainty. Really, I can't remember when it wasn't an uncertain time. And I feel like I keep on saying, oh, this is uncertain. And then there's another like double uncertain. And I'm like, oh, now this is the uncertain time. So how do you balance that uncertainty with curiosity while not using that curiosity to feed maybe some of those anxieties or uncertainty? Like a lot of times now I find myself like doing research, air quotes, my research, which just means Google or something, and being like, I learned about that. Now I'm an expert in economics. I am not at all an expert. But I find the things that maybe only help me cycle into more of the things that I'm trying to maybe step away from when I'm curious. So how do you kind of balance those things in our world?
Are you doom scrolling, Russ?
I mean, yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Oh, we all do it, you know, because it's just so easy
it's
to.
It's a weirdly relaxing thing until you're done. And then you're like, oh, now I'm like way more tense and I need to go listen to some birds.
It's the most stressful, relaxing activity you could ever do.
Yes. And it's so easy and it's so satisfying and accessible. And it's way easier to distract yourself than to sit with the feeling, because I mean we all want to run away from uncomfortable feelings, and until you develop a perspective and mindset that as human beings we experience emotions and they are uncomfortable and they're gonna come and go, you know, until you kind of come to that acceptance, it's gonna be really hard. And even if you come to that acceptance, it's gonna be hard because emotions are tough, you know? But you were talking about navigating uncertainty and how to kind of go about that. I am by no means a mental health expert, especially when it comes to mindfulness. And I am definitely a doom scroller. I definitely struggle with rumination and all the things. However, some of the things that I've learned is that when it comes to uncertainty, it's really important to focus on the things you can control and to acknowledge the things that are out of your control. So one of the basic things that I go to is your thoughts, emotions, and behaviors. So we can't control our thoughts, even though we'd like to think so. We can't control our emotions. Again, we like to think so, but we can. But we can control what we do with those thoughts and emotions. So our choices, our actions. So when it comes to navigating uncertainty, what are the choices that you can make to manage maybe some of those uncomfortable thoughts and emotions that are coming about due to the circumstances of the world? Practicing mindfulness is one of those things. You could choose to, okay, I'm feeling a lot of physical tension right now. I'm having a lot of anxiety. I don't want to be anxious. I don't want to be sad, but I'm experiencing it. I can choose to do something to help manage those feelings. I'm going to try doing some mindfulness right now, which could be the bird watching on the porch using your five senses. It could be you do a breathing exercise. We can control our breaths going in and out and in and out. And you can help slow your heart rate down by doing that. You can do a guided meditation. You can, there's something called progressive muscle relaxation or PMR, where you tense up parts of your body. So right now I'm tightening my fists and you hold it for a couple seconds and you focus on that tension and then you release it. And you notice that physical sensation of the blood releasing from the tension, and you move that throughout your body. So when it comes to navigating uncertainty, it's focusing on what you can control. Asterix, way easier for me to talk about than to actually enact, I will say. And just like mindfulness, muscle, skill, you got to work it out.
Got to work it. I love that you mentioned the muscle release. It's one of those things when I was a little kid, that's how my mom helped us get to sleep, is we do this thing. It was like a rag doll. And I didn't realize, now my mom was also an educator, so this was probably something she had in her toolkit. And we would be, we'd pretend we were sawdust dolls stuffed full. And so we'd tense up every muscle. And then we'd imagine somebody drilled a hole in our foot and all the sawdust would slowly leak out. And so you would, like, starting at your feet and your legs, slowly release the muscles. And at the time, we thought it was just a fun game that we played because there were four of us and we were a little wild and this was a way to calm us all down.
Nice.
It wasn't until adulthood when I realized, like, oh, we were practicing a mindfulness technique and it was a strategy that she was using to help us relax and go to sleep. And it's funny how this seems like it's a really new topic, but we have been, like, these strategies have been around for a long time.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't quite know the full history of mindfulness. I believe it comes from Eastern religious Buddhist practices and is starting to make its way more into Western society. So Eastern society has been utilizing and valuing these benefits for a very long time, you know, and we're putting names and terms and whatnot to it and starting to experience the benefits of it. But I love how your mom really met you and your siblings where you were at and, you know, didn't explain it like how I've been explaining it. She explained it, how to explain it to younger kids, young people in this world. And so you can definitely teach these skills to kids. You know, you just need to kind of get creative, be super visual with it, have fun with it, the play piece of it. I know some people, when it talks about teaching guided breathing to kids, they'll talk about like butterfly breathing or like, do you feel the butterflies in your stomach? And you can use straws to like practice that sensation of breathing, or blowing bubbles is a really good one. Cause I mean, that's just fun. Who doesn't want to blow bubbles, you know?
Yeah. It's not only like you've got the visual, you've got the breathing and it's just a good time all around.
Yeah. Bubbles. Who knew?
Well, it's also interesting when we're talking about kids, because I mean, even way back, kids were like, you're mini adults, be adult now, immediately. And you're saying that our young people have emotions and actually experience those things that we need to...
I said that nonsense. It must be somebody else. Yeah,
I have
you know?
The recording.
Yeah, you know, tiny humans experience emotions from day one. And we're all in this world just trying to figure out how to be human and how to navigate our emotions in life. So yeah, why not teach kids how to manage those, be kind to themselves, and to better navigate this world, you know?
How is that message received with, and I know we still call them kids, but they are the young adults who are here at NIU.
Sure.
You know, because they're in that, you know, they're, some of them are still teenagers, but they are crossing that barrier from kids to adulthood. Are they as open and receptive to this idea of play is still important and it is still a vital role in adulthood? Like, you still need to play. Is that received well?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, I don't know if I have done specific messaging around like the importance of play as the sensory playground, you know, the first time we implemented that with this past spring. I know when I talk to students about, you know, like mental health and well-being, a lot of what I hear is, I don't have time.
Right.
I don't have time to do that. You know, I have to do this. I have to get good grades. I have work. I have whatnot. There's so much on their plate. that's like, how do I do these things? So how would they have time for play, you know?
Yeah.
So it's coming back to meeting them where they're at and where they can have those little like snippets of, you know, potentially play. But I think more it's how do you tap into what their values are and what's important to them. So maybe what they experience as joy is play. And so I would try to figure out, okay, how can you have those little moments of joy, those little pockets of joy and play throughout your day? Because you know the benefits of it can help your overall well-being. I remember reading about or learning about something at a conference. Oh, I don't know if I could directly quote it, but it was this idea of time confetti and how throughout our day, we have these little pockets of time. So maybe, you know, for us staff and faculty on campus, it's like those 2 minutes before your next meeting or your next class, or you're driving back home or something, those little pockets of time. How can you use those little pockets of time confetti to take care of you? Could it be practicing mindfulness? Could it be listen to your favorite song? Could it be you are scrolling through the very cute photos of your cats on your phone? Not that I would know anything about that. I have two cats. They're the greatest in the world.
They are pretty adorable.
Thank you. You know, what are those moments that you could take care of you and have some joy or play? So I'm not sure if I directly answered your question, but I think I teetered around it.
No, I think you raised a good point because so many, whether they're kids in K-12, whether they're young adults, that idea that time is a precious commodity and in short supply because, you know, we got to work, we've got to do school, we've got after school curricula or after school activities, and that I don't have time for that, but making it a priority or finding the pockets of time you do have and using them in a way, you know, put down the doom scrolling phone and
yeah,
go listen to a bird or color or listen to music or do something that brings you joy. I heard it referred one time as the, was it finding the sparkle or something along those lines? It's like the sparkle moments that just to be like, even if it's a short little burst of it, it still adds up in the end.
Yeah. Baby geese. That's mine. When I see baby, we're bird watchers. Why are we all bird watchers? I didn't even realize this now, Kristen. Thank you. But I'm like, oh, baby geese. That's my baby sparkle. I'm like, oh, and then that's it.
And
I don't need it for another 9 months.
You're like,
oh. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, sparkle's gone. Wait, use your hearing to be in the moment. What does that hiss sound like?
Sounds like eager.
There you go. You know, I do want to point out that, you know, I've brought up how talking about this is a lot easier than in implementing it. I also want to make note that for some folks, if we get into the mental health diagnoses and disorders territory, doing some of these things is significantly harder. Mm-hmm. You know, the energy.
Ah, knew it. I'm going to be great at it. It's just hard for me. Got it. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Sarah. That just.
Yeah. Just pull yourself up by your bootstraps, try harder, and you'll be fine.
Deal.
You sound like my kids.
Sarcasm
font, yes.
Yeah, in big letters, you know. Yeah, it's that for folks and those of us who do have mental health diagnoses, you know, we ask ourselves, why can't I do this? Why can't I just sit on the back porch and listen to birds? Why can't I just stop the tornado of thoughts in my head? Why can't I just get out of bed? Why is it so hard? And so I would encourage folks that if you do feel that way, that it is really, really difficult to talk to somebody and to get that support from a licensed professional, because there is help and you don't have to struggle that much, and that there are people here to help you, and you can experience mindfulness and what it's like to differentiate between a not an Oreo, an Oriole and an Oriole. A frog. Yeah. or an Oreo and an Oriole and a frog, you know?
Now I want to
oh my gosh, right? And the different fun Oreo flavors. Now I'm getting distracted. But nonetheless, there is support out there if you feel like you really are struggling with this. So I just wanted to make sure to note that, you know?
Yeah. Well, and Sarah, the help can help, right? Like it can improve. So for me, it's always been very clear to figure out medical help. I know when there's like a lot of times an action, like do this, whether it's physical therapy, take antibiotics, cast your broken arm, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
I don't know if we as our country have done it that like, no, you do this work and it can be better. You don't have to stay in this feeling or this specific moment in time.
Yeah, it's hard to see the invisible illnesses and when they are impairing, because it's not like, oh, look, my arm is perpendicular, you know, and it's not supposed to be like that. So I think a lot of it has to do with like our culture and society's messages around mental health and work and whatnot, you know. You just have like a cough, you could go to school, you know, that those types of messages. You know, when it comes to identifying when to ask for help, essentially when to seek that help, since it's not as obvious, I always encourage people to consider what their baseline functioning is. So for example, I am a lucky person who struggles with chronic migraines. Love that for me. And so my baseline is that I experience chronic migraines. However, when I am struggling to manage my mental health or more stressed, I get more of them. Again, lucky me. And so that is a sign to me that, okay, I either need to whip out my mental health toolkit and start doing some of those coping strategies, or maybe I need to go visit my licensed mental health professional that I go and see. So what is your baseline? And when do you know there are those changes that tell you I need to take better care of myself? So you can examine that through physically. What are your changes? Emotional changes. So I'm a really sensitive person. So when I cry, that's a baseline for me. But if I'm noticing it's more frequently, that's an indicator for me. You can look at it behaviorally. So maybe procrastination. Maybe you don't procrastinate at all. And then suddenly you notice you're really starting to avoid a lot of things. That could be a reason to talk to somebody. You can also look at it from the thoughts that you're having. So maybe you're thinking about, I don't want to go hang out with my friends, or I just want to stay in bed all day. You know, those types of thoughts that aren't from your baseline. So overall, if you're starting to experience signs that deviate from your baseline, that impair your functioning or your ability to go about your day optimally and successfully, then that's when it would be time to go and talk to somebody. So when you break your arm, that is a clear impairment to your functioning. You can't go to work. You can't really do your activities of daily living. So like hygiene, cooking food for yourself and whatnot. Mental health can do the same thing. It's just not as physically apparent. The more you know. So I gesture rainbow hands.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yep. There you go. Yeah.
Well, Sarah, this has been so much fun to talk with you. I know I've walked away with some tips and ideas and things that I can immediately put into place and be more aware of. If people want to learn more, is there a good place? Or if we've got students, NIU students who are listening and they want to engage with you and the department, what's the best place for them to find more resources?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you could go on NIU's website and search counseling and consultation services, and that'll pull up our counseling homepage where you can learn about how to get started with our services, which, if you didn't know, if you're a fee-paying student, you get free mental health counseling from our counseling center. We offer individual and group counseling. Our phone number also operates as a 24/7 line, so you could call us 3 a.m. when the university is closed, and we will answer the phone.
Awesome.
So you could check that out. We also have Instagram and we have Facebook, but I know people mostly go on Instagram. We are NIU Healthy Huskies. You can also find it on the NIU counseling page. But on our Instagram, we post about our programs. We post helpful tips and tricks for helping your well-being. And if you just want your feed to be filled with more health, wellness, and empowering messages, definitely give us a follow to
add
enlighten
sparkle.
Your... Yeah, add sparkle. Thank you. I'm like trying to find a cool word, and I did not. But let's go with sparkle.
We're going to add some sparkle. Well, Sarah, this has been so much fun to talk, and it's been a joy. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much for inviting me. Hey, like, subscribe, hit the bell for notifications, link in the doobly-doo, you know?
Yeah.
This has been a production of the STEAM Studio. Please make sure you like, subscribe, and leave a review to help others discover our shows. You can listen on platforms like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you for listening to this STEAM Spotlight. Thank you to our partners, NIU STEAM and Northern Illinois University, for supporting this podcast. If you would like to learn more about the work we do, please check us out online at niusteam.niu.edu. Thank you so much for listening.